Welcome to the StoryCorps Montana Special.
We've had about, 650,000 people participate now. So it's the largest collection of human voices ever gathered.
What's the wildest or the most remote place that you've been? Was that in Antarctica?
Actually, when I finished my first year in Antarctica, I said, it's pretty cold here. Goodbye, Antarctica. And I waved as the ship took us away. And less than a year later, I was back for another year. You know, we started seeing the effects of climate change in 1947 because we had scientists from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology with us in Antarctica, and they knew global warming was happening.
StoryCorps' mission is to preserve and share humanity's stories in order to build connections between people and create a more just and compassionate world.
There's, a light of goodness in all of us. And I do think that honor and hope are words that we use in StoryCorps a lot. And I do think it's a great year to kind of look back on and take lessons from and get energized by so that we can move forward into a better tomorrow.
I'm Michael Marsalek. For the next hour, we will celebrate StoryCorps Montana. We'll hear the voices of Montanans, facilitators, and coordinators of the mobile tours, and StoryCorps founder Dave Isay as well. It's Honor, Hope, and Healing Week on MTPR. Thanks for joining us.
In this excerpt, we have Josh Slotnick speaking with Philip Burgess on a back porch in Missoula about what it was like growing up on a rural Montana farm.
You grew up in a kind of a world that doesn't really exist anymore in rural Montana. And I was wondering if you could just start by describing what that was like.
It was a beautiful piece of landscape. Looking over the Missouri River Valley, we could see a mile and a half of river from our backyard. And the Badlands came up from the far side of the river on the north side. And the Great Northern Railroad ran east and west on the far side of the river. I remember as a child laying in my bed at night, hearing the sound of the steam whistle bouncing off the sides of the valley. It was a beautiful place, but at the same time, we were a hard scrabble working ranch farm, and there was a sense of kind of desperation. And in the midst of a pretty dysfunctional extended family who ran the ranch together, my dad said that sometimes it was like purgatory with a wonderful view. And so I also grew up with watching my mom and dad suffer. We did not have running water. We did not have telephones. We didn't have electricity until I was 6 or 7 years old. And so they did everything the hard way. It was extremely stressful for both of them. Plus there were four of us kids in this little three rooms. I don't even remember for sure where we slept. I don't know where they put us in that little space.
You must have spent a lot of time outside.
As much as possible. And I'm sure that came also from our parents. My mother was quite happy to have us outside a lot. But the landscape became a refuge from the dysfunctional extended family and from the stress, the almost claustrophobic physical thing of these three little rooms. And so early on, it became a refuge for me, being outside and being outside by myself.
Did you work with your dad at all?
Well, it's,
as much as he would.
It was kind of a cultural thing where the kids, as long as we were little and cute, people knew what to do with us. It was like play with us, But about the time you stopped being so little and cute, around five or six. You were kind of on your own until you could start working.
When did you start working?
When you were five or six.
That was Josh Slotnick and Philip Burgess, recorded as a part of the StoryCorps Montana Virtual Tour.
This is Michael Marsalek. I'm talking with Danielle Anderson, the Associate Director of the Mobile Tours for StoryCorps. Nice to talk with you again, Danielle.
You too, Michael. Thanks for having me.
When we were talking last year in 2019, and even before, as the early planning stages for bringing StoryCorps back to Montana, we were planning this great voyage to Montana with the Airstream trailer, and the whole plans were going into place for being on the ground in Missoula, Montana for a month. And then, of course, COVID hit and everything changed. Can we just for a second reflect back on what it is that you normally do when you travel and you come to an area with the mobile tour, and how we really had to shift things? You folks just on a dime had to figure out a way to continue to be able to record in the era of COVID. Maybe start with a little bit of, you know, we had been planning for a very long time to bring StoryCorps back to Montana.
Yeah, I mean, I remember you and I spoke, we met at some meeting a couple of years back, and we kind of started talking about, wouldn't it be great to bring the mobile tour back to Montana, and getting all excited. And yeah, you and I had been planning for this for a couple of years, to bring the tour itself and the mobile booth and the whole crew out to Missoula. And so, you know, the plan had been to bring our Airstream trailer that has a converted recording studio in the back out to Missoula and park it for, I believe, 5 to 6 weeks, and just invite people there to record with us. Obviously, once the pandemic came, that needed to shift. And yeah, I mean, I think to say we turn it on a dime might be a little generous. I remember a couple moments of sheer panic, but we figured it out. We figured out a way to basically take what we do in the Airstream, in that, you know, in-person recording experience, and mirror that on a virtual platform so that we could still bring the StoryCorps recording experience and interview experience to Montana, just in a slightly different way.
You know, I think, Danielle, that the StoryCorps project, and especially the mobile tours, have this long history now of capturing people's conversations all across America. And there are hundreds of thousands of recordings now that have been made, and they're archived at the Library of Congress. But can you say something about, really, when you talk about StoryCorps, though, the actual project of StoryCorps is a very intimate process, right? It's usually two people, a facilitator there, and having what is often a very intimate and personal conversation, right?
Yeah, I mean, and the thing that's lovely about the mobile tour is that not only do we get to get out into the country, we get to get out into communities, and we get to stay for, you know, an extended period of time, so that, you know, the folks that aren't familiar with StoryCorps can take some time to get to know us. But yeah, the experience of recording is very intimate in the mobile booth, and honestly in the digital space as well. But it's two people with a facilitator that have 40 minutes of time to talk about anything they want. The booth space is very small, very cozy, very intimate, you know, so people really just have each other there to focus on without all of the other distractions that kind of can pull at our attention, you know, throughout our days. We tried to take all of those and set them aside so that people could really just focus on each other and have those conversations that, you know, we often don't have time for. And I think that that's the thing that sometimes people find so surprising, is that experience of actually just sitting down with somebody they care about, somebody they think that they know really well, somebody that honestly they do know really well, but taking that real intentional time to just focus that energy, that listening energy, on somebody else. Surprising things can happen in that. It's a different kind of intimacy.
Well, and one thing that has happened, I'm sure, you know, just talking to some of the folks with StoryCorps Montana, which happened in June, that even though the face-to-face connection has shifted, the intimacy hasn't changed, the power of the human voice hasn't changed, the desire to connect with one another and share these stories is perhaps even more important, don't you think?
I do. And I think that that was the thing that, you know, and I remember you and I talking about this when all this happened, you know, when we started doing this in a digital space, we're like, is it going to feel the same? are people going to bring that same level of concentration, that same intentionality to this space? And they did. And I think you're right. I think there's something to be said about being separated from our loved ones, being kind of in this, you know, whatever level of isolation we're in, there's a self-reflection that happens in that. And there's kind of a crystallization of what is truly important for a lot of people. And those what's truly important for a lot of people are the strength of their connections with their family and their friends. And that's become more and more apparent over these last months, I feel like. And so, you know, in the virtual space, it is certainly different. But people are coming and they're showing up as themselves with the people that they love and having those conversations, kind of diving into those things. And again, I think it's that the ability, what StoryCorps does is that kind of ability to set aside all of that other stuff, taking these moments away from the rest of our lives, away from some of these stresses, away from all of these things that pull at our attention, and really just spending that time with the people we care about.
In this excerpt, we have Mara Ponich speaking with her friend and mentor Barbara Thoreau in Missoula about how their bookstore has responded to the events of 2020.
Something that's been on my mind a lot as a person running a business, there's a need to respond both to the COVID-19 virus and the Black Lives Matter movement. You know, I've put out a very strong stance on how our bookstore feels about the Black Lives Matter movement in support of it, and how we think that words and books are important learning devices for people, particularly people in towns like our own, where we have a very, very small percentage of a diverse community. But we do have protesters all over the state saying things, talking about things. And we've just seen a surge of people searching out information, which I think is nationwide, people searching out information and trying to learn about what's going on and learn how they can be better and how they can be better allies. And
what do we read? What do we read now? Mm-hmm. Discuss the ideas.
Yeah. I know you haven't gone through a pandemic, but I also know that there are some instances of big political things that have happened. And I wonder how, you know, in these earlier days, how you decided what to take a stand on and what to be vocal about, and how you decided to navigate these social issues.
Yeah, it is a tough question. And I think booksellers in particular usually have the cause signs. Early on, I learned not to have political signs because sometimes people were divided about things. And then I always thought, you know, as First Amendment, strong First Amendment person and belief, you tried to have all views. People would be surprised because they'd find a conservative viewpoint. Oh, I didn't think you'd have this book. And it's like, well, yeah. So your community and your store grows as you have what people are looking for. Times have changed. And then the diversity, that was a big thing that happened. Diversity in publishing, please give us more, please give us more. And it's finally out there, which makes your decisions even harder than mine were because there's such a variety. My customer base is older. I was working in some cases with the third generation of people, which is exciting and fun. But, you know, in order to grow, you have to continue to bring in new people and new ideas and go in the direction that the town or community is taking you in, mm-hmm. which I think you're great at doing that. So fact and fiction goes on.
Indeed.
In this excerpt, we have Shane Vanetta talking with his mother, Karen Vanetta, in Missoula about what it was like to come out as a gay man to the family.
First, you know, you just had to adjust to it. It took a while thinking, wow, I wonder what people think, or I wonder what this, what did we do wrong? There's so many questions that came up. But you know something? I am proud of you guys. You have made me a better person because of it. Because, you know, we came from Eastern Montana, in that little area, and there wasn't this. Now, coming all circle around with it, you have made me open my heart to everyone and to treat everyone the same as I would want to be treated. And
I'm going to tell a story about you,
though. I
really
do.
Which is...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is, I remember writing the letters
coming out, because I was the first of us two to come out. And first of all, I remember writing those letters just sobbing, because I knew I was going to lose you all as a result of the coming out process. Yeah. Yeah. I remember sticking them in the mail and I couldn't retrieve them, and that was a good thing. And then I got a phone call when I was in the law firm's library, and they announced, Shane, yes, your mother's calling. Okay, I picked up the phone, and the first words out of your mouth were, we will get you the best counseling money can buy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't fault you for that, Mom. I know that it conveyed concern and a desire to help, although it was misguided. We had a conversation then, and we had many conversations thereafter. But then speeding ahead about 5 or 6 years or maybe 7 years later, I remember I was in Eastern Montana on a tour as president of the State Bar of Montana and stayed overnight in Williston with you. I just remember you and Dad were in your chairs and I was laying on the couch, and all of a sudden you were talking about our extended family. There was an attempt to hide a lot of family things that were going on. And I remember you saying that having two gay sons was the best thing to happen to our family. And I bolted up and I think I yelled out some expletives. You said, well, again, you brought a level of honesty and reality to our family. We weren't trying to be the best family. We were trying to be a real family. And that's what always struck me. And to have come full circle like that was just an amazing journey, a hard one, but an amazing one.
That was Shane Vanetta speaking with his mother, Karen Vanetta, recorded as part of the StoryCorps Montana virtual tour.
My name is Nico Cadena. I am the manager of community partnerships for the StoryCorps mobile tour. I think that when people hear about the mobile tour, they might not be aware that roughly around 35% of the partnerships, of the conversations that come in, are through community-based partnerships and work with various organizations and grassroots folks and large and small nonprofits that just want to be a part of the StoryCorps experience. When we go into a city, we know that we want to get as large of a sampling of folks as possible, or as diverse a population as we possibly can whenever we go into a new stop. And we like to do that by partnering with folks that really have contact with individuals on the ground, a contact with diverse communities inside of a space. And that's why it's so important for us to really partner with folks who have been in, for example, Montana for many, many years and have a strong connection with people in their community. That's what makes the outreach component so crucial to the mobile tour. We had quite a few outreach partnerships that were able to come in. And we had some amazing partnerships. I'm just going to list out a couple of organizations with you all. We had a really great partnership, for example, with the Missoula Art Museum, which did a great job at recording Native voices and voices of Native contemporary artists. And that was a fantastic interview series that we recorded with them, which they actually went on to take a digital storytelling workshop with us and are now actually recording independently their own individual recordings that they keep on emailing us about. And we're really excited to hear that we were able to leave that sort of practice with them. Another fantastic organization was Climate Smart Missoula. They did a fantastic series of recordings on climate change, and their the folks that work with them, their history in and involvement within the fight for climate change and reform. We also had some great organizations that catered to just a really diverse array of populations. We had Mountain Home Montana, which supported and provided shelter for young mothers. Soft Landing Missoula, which was helping refugee populations that were being integrated into Montana or were settled or settling into Montana. We had a really great partnership with the Montana County Public School System, and just really a wide variety of organizations per every one of our subs. But something that I really love about the organizations that we worked with in Montana was just the variety of organizations, everything from the food bank to the public library to the art museum to just these smaller kind of more issue-based groups. It was a really awesome experience to work with you all at the station and also the fantastic organizations in the area. Ali, wanted to add one last shout out. We had a fantastic series of recordings with the Missoula Food Bank and Community Center. Just wanted to shout them out as well. It was amazing to work with an organization on the ground that was providing such an integrated service. And it's always such a great exchange to work with organizations because they also taught us a lot about working with participants, et cetera. So something that I think people oftentimes forget about community partnerships is that it is an exchange, and it's really a way for us to open the door to learn from community organizations as much as it is to provide our services. And working with folks like the folks at the Missoula Art Museum and the Missoula Food Bank just really kind of proved how important it is to have some sort of a connection with folks on the ground, more so than just being able to open our doors and record conversations. I really loved working with some of the folks in Montana because they just provided such a warm environment of to exchange thoughts and exchange ideas. It was a fantastic, fantastic stop.
In this excerpt, we have Asma Abukai speaking with Clem Work in Missoula about coming to America as a refugee.
I left Syria in 2012. And I went to Egypt seeking safety for me and for my kids. I made this decision by myself and traveled with my kids by myself as a single mom because I wanted my kids to be happy and to have a normal childhood. I am not safe as a single mom or single woman, but still it's less terrifying than seeing the war face to face. To be able to stay legal in Egypt, I have to register in UNHCR as a refugee in Egypt. All refugees who register in UNHCR review the file and they see if that person is eligible to resettle to different country. My luck was to America, but they did not tell me that I resettled to America until last minute, only about 1 month. When I got the phone call from IOM telling me that congratulations, you got resettled to the United States. It was such a great, great moment.
So after you got settled here a little bit, you started working with refugees yourself, right?
Yeah. I mean, for me as a refugee, I can feel the pain of other refugees when they arrive to the United States without help. And help doesn't mean money. Help mean knowledge. It's a different culture. It's a different country. It's a different food. It's a different language. It's a different everything. So I appreciated the help I got so much because of the incredible people they helped me to stand up on my feet. And I wanted so bad to be that person, to join those people with their hard journey. And I want to be that part of healing process. With the refugee community.
Well, I want to ask you about a very important thing that happened in your life.
Yes.
Just
yes,
a
I
couple
know.
Of weeks ago, I think.
Yes.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my God.
Your citizenship.
I don't know how to say that. It's just an incredible feeling. Being part of this country as an American, it's such a responsibility how to be a great American, not only good American. United States did not give me only home. United States gave me everything after I came with a broken heart. It's just an incredible to think about it and think about the responsibility I hold every day being an American citizen right now.
Asma, I thank you for coming to this country.
That was Asma Abukai and Clem Work, recorded as part of the StoryCorps Montana Virtual Tour. Many of the recordings are archived at the Library of Congress. For more information, visit storycorps.org. In this excerpt, we have Hannah Vinge in Hot Springs speaking with her daughter, Sarah McMillan, in Missoula about conservation of both our forests and humanity.
We've had a very exciting, adventurous life together, Sarah, and your work has somewhat been inspired by that, but you have a long ancestral history of law because of grandpa and then your dad's outdoor, the nature loving in Montana, your connection with preserving that soul.
It's our home.
I beautiful mean,
in
and vital.
The largest sense, the earth is home. And if we don't protect the biodiversity here, if we don't protect the water and the air, if we don't protect the wild places, then we don't have a home. And at the same time, here we are in the midst of this incredible racial unrest because of racial injustice. And it makes me think about, okay, so I'm working to protect wilderness and Canada lynx and grizzly bears, but people are being killed in their homes by police officers. Black people are being killed in their homes. And I'm just so aware of my privilege. And I it's just been so shocking. And it's not shocking because I know it's been happening for hundreds of years. So I don't, enraging, I guess. I'm feeling it more viscerally because I know how safe I am. And that's so wrong and unfair. So I don't know why I went there, I guess, but just thinking about what is in my work, and then it makes me question, like, God, so really, am I going to be working on protecting grizzly bears when people are being killed in the streets by supposedly our public servant police officers? This is crazy.
Well, it's all a package of human injustice, economic injustice, and natural world injustice. It's all together. And that does seem like there's a cry from all of us, the whole world, to change how we relate to each other, to nature, to all of life and the planet and the cosmos.
That was Sarah McMillan and Hannah Vinge, recorded as part of the StoryCorps Montana virtual tour.
I'm Michael Marsalek. I'm talking with Eunice Cho, site manager for the mobile tour for StoryCorps and also a facilitator in some of the StoryCorps Montana recordings. First of all, thanks for taking the time to talk with Montana Public Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can I start by asking you a little bit about what was it like trying to pivot from what you normally do when you're on the ground in a community to doing something virtually like this?
I think it was challenging and beautiful. And what was so awesome about the Missoula, Montana stop was that it was our first full virtual stop. Before that stop, we were in Boise, Idaho. It was not completely open to the public. We only had a few recording appointments, but in Montana, we opened it up and Montana showed up for it. I mean, our schedule was packed. It was so wonderful to see the people being really willing to work with us, because, you know, it was almost like a guinea pig. Montana was our little guinea pig because we were taking everything to a virtual platform. And so we had to figure out like the tech side of things. Montana, some places in Montana are pretty rural. And so we had to figure out what that was going to look like. And so Montana is a very special place for us because the people there were figuring out with us as we were going along and kind of building the airplane as we were flying it. And so it was, I think we were all kind of learning how to use technology and really grateful for computers and everything electronic because, you know, we were all kind of experiencing the pandemic at the same time. But a facilitator, basically, you're acting as a guide in the space. You're making sure that participants are feeling comfortable, that they feel that their voice is being respected. It's holding space for people. I mean, a lot of people come and they share really difficult stories that sometimes they haven't shared with anyone before. And so a lot of it is just, yeah, making sure that they feel comfortable in that space. Also asking questions. I think that's a really big part of the work that we do. Clarifying questions, reflective questions, anything that can draw up more stories. Because I know, you know, especially people show up with the recording partner is most of the time someone that they know already. So they already have that very intimate relationship. Whereas, you know, as someone from the outside looking in, they might kind of blow over something that we listen to it and say, hey, that sounds really interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? Or what was that experience like? Or a particular, like a question that I absolutely love is if you could paint a picture with words of the person that you're sitting in front of, or like the person that you're remembering during this recording. Can you do that? And it's just really amazing to see how people, I think, almost flourish. You know, if you ask the right questions, their faces brighten up and they start thinking about it. And then they just respond in this very beautiful way, you know, something that might not have come up if the facilitator didn't speak up and ask that question. And in the virtual space, it's a little bit different. We're almost like a tech guide as well. We have to figure out how to get people onto the correct browser and things like that. So we do have to put our tech hats on, but there isn't too much of a difference. We also write the notes. We write log notes, which is something just marking any transitions in the conversation, any quotes. Those things all get on the online archives at StoryCorps, and we also share that with the Library of Congress, which all of our recordings get archived at if the participants want to release the recording to us.
We had almost 100 recordings in Montana back in June, and an amazing response, I think, from Montana listeners. And it seems like, you know, at first glance, the usual wonderful variety of connections, right? People, young people talking to elders, grandparents, husband and wife, kind of spouse situations. We had young people interviewing old people. We had friends interviewing mentors. Can you give us a couple of highlights of the kinds of things that you heard from Montana, or the kinds of connections that were made in Montana?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you mentioned probably all of the different pairings that came in. I did see that a lot of younger generation folks coming in with their older generation, maybe grandmothers, grandfathers, really wanting to record their grandmother and grandfather just so that they can have a copy of that. There's a lot of war veterans in Montana, which I didn't realize. And something that I shared with my friends and family, because Montana was the one stop that I really wanted to go to. I mean, it's so beautiful. The people there are so friendly. But something that I said to my friends and family was, I just feel like Montana is a place where people go to heal. I thought that was a big theme that came up in the conversations. The Black Lives Matter movement, that was a huge conversation topic. Especially amongst the Native American participants, I think they were able to resonate with what was happening, because we were there kind of when the Black Lives Matter movement was really going strong, and it's still going strong to this day. But I think it's maybe clouded by a lot of the political things happening around us. But wonderful pairings came in, lots of mentors coming in, there's actually a lot of people from who recorded with us who were not Native Montanans. But call Montana their home now, which that was really beautiful to see. There was so much pride, you know, everyone was super proud about living in Montana, especially there's like, you know, a lot of multi-generational families that came in and did recordings. A lot of people talked about the ranches, growing up in Montana, everything like that. I mean, I think in those 100 recordings that you have, there's probably a ton of different stories that came out of interesting pairings and really beautiful stories that came out, you know, specific to Montana and others not so specific to Montana.
Do you have a couple of moments from your Montana stop that come to your memory that maybe have stuck with you, or at the moment you're like, wow, this is an amazing thing to be part of or witnessing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really do want to start off by saying it's such an honor and a privilege to be a facilitator, just to be in front of or just hold space with people who are so willing to share their stories with us. And I remember maybe the second or third recording that I did in Montana, it was this man, I think he's actually a very famous artist. I'm not sure if we're allowed to say names here, but he was with his mentee and friend, and they were just talking about their experience in basic training before or during the Vietnam War. And it was, you know, I think within 5 minutes of the recording, he started weeping. And I just remember his friend and I were just sitting there listening to him talk about how difficult it was for him to see what the purpose of basic training was, what the purpose of war was. You know, it was to hurt other people. And that was the way that he said it. And I remember at the end of the recording, and what was really particular about this recording was I think he knew that it was going to be a very triggering topic for him to talk about, but he wanted to talk about it. And he, before we started the recording, he said to his friend, "When I ask you what your thoughts are on this, that means that I'm done talking, and that's how I want to end the conversation. After he ended the conversation, I remember I stopped the recording button, and he walked away to grab some tissues, and his friend and I, we just sat there kind of crying and looking at one another, because the story that he had shared was so powerful. I mean, it was such a huge moment for me just to be able to listen to his story and hear how he had really changed his life after that experience. And now he's an artist in Montana, healing himself and healing others. Let me tell you, people in Montana are really cool.
In this excerpt, we have spouses Samuel Keith Harworth and Valerie Joyce Kurth in Helena, speaking about what it's like to adopt a daughter during a pandemic.
I have a memory of the first time you told me you were in love with me, and it was on the top of some mountain in southern Utah. Do you remember that?
Oh.
Yeah. It was really sweet. I remember feeling overwhelmed but happy.
Yeah, it was kind of like when I asked you to marry me. You responded with, "That's no, a good story really, too. Me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we're starting our next chapter, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
And that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
This is to talk about our crazy pandemic.
So what's been the most memorable part of the pandemic for you?
Well, it was like right away. We haven't even realized that it was starting. And then we got the notification. We got matched to that wonderful little girl in China, Neon Wei. And, you know, the first thing we had to do is decide if she was going to be the right little girl for us. And it didn't take long to know that we were in love and that we needed to have this little girl as part of our life.
You knew right away.
I know. Those first pictures were pretty cute.
The videos.
And then when we started and add the videos, that was when we knew. Yeah, she's great. She's going to be so much fun.
I think that having a child, there's so much uncertainty. And then adopting, I would imagine this period would be stressful no matter what. But adopting during a pandemic in this political climate between the United States and China is extremely stressful. There's so many moments where I just look at the news and I'm like, they're never going to let us go. It's not going to happen. And luckily I have Sam to stay more positive and to help me with that. But I guess I would like to tell her that we're super excited to bring her home and to love her and to figure out what she needs and how we can be a family together.
In this excerpt, we have friends George DiGiorgio, who's in Great Falls, speaking with Charles Ironstone in Missoula about their friendship and how the ocean was different back in the 1940s.
We've been friends for a long time. You remember when we met?
I do. We met on the day of my 70th birthday in 1998. I went to Dillon with my friend, the anthropologist from the Forest Service, Billy Maxwell, and he told me, "I'm going to introduce you to a good friend and we'll see what we can do for your birthday." So we got to Dillon, Montana, and we decided that the way to celebrate the birthday was to climb, to do the Lemhi Pass, which was done by Lewis and Clark in 1805. So that's what we did. We spent my birthday at 7,200 feet.
So how did you end up in Montana?
Well, that was after many, 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 many years. That was after spending more than 30 years at sea. I retired from the ocean navigating in Long Beach, California, and I just couldn't get used to the life in the big city. So I came one time on a vacation to Montana, and I stayed here. I've been here for 26 years.
I've been here for 26 years now, too.
Yeah, how did you get to Montana, Chuck?
I just loaded up my car and drove out. I wanted to be by Glacier National Park and Yellowstone National Park because I wanted to be around the wildlife. So now all these years later, I work on the Yellowstone bison issue with the Buffalo Field Campaign and then the Save the Yellowstone Grizzly issue with Doug Peacock. It was kind of a fate and I guess somewhat of my destiny to move west and be involved with these people and organizations now. And what's the wildest or the most remote place that you you've been. Was that in Antarctica?
I think that would be Antarctica. Actually, when I finished my first year in Antarctica, I said, it's pretty cold here. Goodbye, Antarctica. And I waved as the ship took us away. And less than a year later, I was back for another year. You know, we started seeing the effects of climate change in 1947 because we had scientists from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology with us in Antarctica, and they knew global warming was happening. And we thought we're on the mainland, and now what used to be our base is an island about a quarter of a mile offshore. The ice is melting very fast in Antarctica. You know, you wouldn't recognize the place anymore.
So, and did you also see a decline in the health of the oceans, like maybe plastic in the ocean or anything like that?
Well, yeah, we started seeing that in the 50s, because before that, when we sailed the Pacific or the Atlantic or the Caribbean, the ocean was pristine, you know, nice and blue and clear. All you could see was seaweeds and the Sargasso Sea. And pretty soon we started seeing plastic bottles, plastic containers and jugs and things, and islands of plastic floating in the ocean.
And what do you think the younger generation could do to, you know, for the environment or helping the planet? Because I know that you think it's in decline. You've seen the decline of it. Do you have any inspirational words for the youth?
I would say think about what's going to happen to your children, because it seems like if today's politicians don't worry too much about what's going to be in the future, you know, they worry about themselves. Same thing with the CEOs of big companies. They're worried about what's going to happen to themselves, but not to their children and grandchildren.
That was Georges DeGiorgio talking with Charles Ironstone, recorded as part of the StoryCorps Montana virtual tour.
My name is Chuck Ironstone, and I interviewed Georges DeGiorgio in Great Falls, Montana, and we discussed his travels around the world as a sailor and high adventurer. Storytelling has always really resonated me, and I think it's kind of a lost art in our modern culture. And then I thought of my friend Georges DeGiorgio, and George and I met around 20 years ago at the Patagonia Outlet in Dillon, Montana, and it was his 70th birthday, and he was traveling with my friend cultural anthropologist Billy Maxwell. They were following the Lewis and Clark Trail down to Lemhi Pass, and they invited me along on their adventure, and then I realized that George was really one of the true adventurers on that trip. He is he's from a European aristocracy. His dad was literally an Italian count. And then he sailed the seas for over 30 years and spent a couple years in Antarctica. And I'm a fan of the world's adventurers, so I just fell in love with the guy. And so, you know, with that said, his gift is storytelling. I think that comes from his travels around the world and stopping in ports and getting information from the harbor master and also local taverns. And so his gift is to be able to tell those stories over and over again. And at the age of 92, his memory is so sharp, and he can relive all of them in vivid details. So I thought that when I heard about the StoryCorps Connect, he would be a perfect person to interview to capture his adventurous life for posterity. It actually was as simple as you could imagine, and that is because George, even though for his age, has never given up on technology. He reminds me of Q from James Bond. Every time I see him, he has the latest iPad and the newest watch and the newest electric bike. And so with that said, he was able to easily record a StoryCorps interview that most people his age would have no idea what to do.
You obviously have, both you and George obviously have a deep connection to the power of the story and the natural connection with StoryCorps that way. What would you say to someone who is pondering how and whether they should do a recording with a loved one and just the importance of trying to get something on tape like this?
Oh, I think it's very important, because from what I was saying, we've kind of lost that connection of storytelling. And so I would encourage, you know, anyone to sit down with their loved ones and tell that story and you know, create some meaning around it and then pass it on for the future generations so we can start having more meaningful, richer connections to each other.
In this excerpt, we have siblings Elizabeth and Jamie Junkel talking in Missoula about which is better, interacting with humans or bears.
A big part of what you do is managing the animals, but it's also managing the relationships between animals and the growing population of humans who are encroaching on their territory. Which do you find more frightening to deal with, wild animals or humans?
Well, humans by far. I mean, you know, you get an angry call from a rancher or a person, you know, who has had their garage door ripped off or a calf killed. You know, they're very anxious, they're frightened. So for me, when I'm walking into the situation, it's not the bear or the lion that I'm concerned about. I'm more worried about the individual who's made the call and I'm coming onto his property. The type of work I do is mostly working with people and having to engage people and kind of prop them up a little bit and encourage them, you know, that grizzlies aren't quite as bad as they are in the books and the newspapers.
Maybe because you've touched them and you've smelled them and you've handled them, maybe you could say, what is it like to work with a grizzly? Like, what do they smell like? What does it feel like to touch a grizzly? And like, what is it like to be in their presence?
Well, you know, grizzlies are just, physiologically very, very advanced. I mean, the fact that they can hibernate for half the year and live off fat reserves.
Well, what do they smell like? They don't smell very good.
Well, no, that's a myth. You'll hear this over and over again, that the reason I knew a bear was nearby was I smelled this terrible stench, and then suddenly the bear moved into the moonlight. That's a bunch of bullpucky. Bears have a beautiful earthy smell, you know, very much like when you go down into a root cellar or when you, have your head down on the ground and you're smelling the earth. When you touch a bear or even a mountain lion or any of the predators, the denseness of the muscle mass is just amazing.
Would you mind doing your bear noise now? I know it's accurate, and I think people would like to hear what a bear sounds like.
Well, you bet. So here it is. It's and that's the alert sound that a bear does when he sees something in the dark and isn't quite sure what it is.
That was amazing. You work so hard to make sure that animals are still a priority in the American West, and your work that you do with human-animal interactions is something I don't think many people even realize is needed in this world.
That was Elizabeth and Jamie Junkel, recorded as part of the StoryCorps Montana Virtual Tour.
I'm speaking with Dave Isay today, the founder and president of StoryCorps. I know back in April and May, I had been working with Danielle, one of your mobile tour coordinators, for a long time for our big StoryCorps virtual tour. Our StoryCorps originally planned on being on the ground tour, of course, back in June. And when we had to turn that into a virtual tour, it seemed like your organization had to just turn on a dime to figure out how to do that. And from the folks I've talked to and the excerpts we've been able to put on the air, it seems like some really meaningful connections were still able to be made. And this new technology is probably opening doors that you didn't even realize were possible to open now that you have the virtual platform there. How do you think this is going to change things going forward? I imagine once we get post-pandemic, you will certainly never abandon the face-to-face power of that. But how has 2020 and the changes that you've had to make shifted the way that you think about StoryCorps going forward?
Well, I should say that you guys also pivoted on a dime to make it possible for us to do a virtual tour. You know, that usually we have these beautiful Airstream trailers that travel around, and StoryCorps has always been this, you know, face-to-face experience, and we were experimenting together. And I also had a note that of all of the virtual stops that we've done, that the engagement in Montana was the highest of any stop that we've had. So again, props to Montana Public Radio. We had always planned, especially for One Small Step, that we knew that we wanted to have a virtual way of doing StoryCorps. And we had it on our timeline for happening in 2024. And obviously the pandemic forced us to do it in to create it in 2 weeks in 2020. So actually we had planned to have it, up and running in 2023. So, you know, sometimes your best laid plans are undermined by, you know, history, and it pushes you in a way you didn't know you were going to be pushed. I think that StoryCorps Connect, this virtual way of doing StoryCorps, lifts the barriers of geography. You know, we needed to see whether not being face-to-face, you could still have a meaningful experience, and you can. So I think if you have an opportunity to be face-to-face and do these interviews, whether in a StoryCorps booth, with an app, in other ways, that will happen once this pandemic is behind us. But if you're, you know, if you have a grandma who's in another country or another state, if you have an elder who you can't get to for one reason or another, I think StoryCorps Connect will be a way to do these interviews, even if you can't be present with them physically. One of the things that you find when you do a StoryCorps interview is that they're very informal. You know, it's not about, this is not about showing off. It's not about making sure that your bio is perfectly correct. You know, it's really StoryCorps, we're kind of in the human connection business. So it's about sitting with a loved one and just having a conversation. And that's all that it is. There is no pressure in the booth. You know, it's really more of a just being with someone experience. And all of us can do that. It's another thing that people in hospice talk about is that doctors and other caregivers and nurses is it's not about you. And this is, you know, in a way, just an act of hopefully it's wonderful for you too, because it's a chance to be listened to. Folks who have served in the military or people who had loved ones die in 9/11 who don't want to, you know, aren't interested in talking to therapists, and, you know, they don't want to be, you know, examined in a kind of someone in a white coat come to StoryCorps, because they almost see it as a patriotic duty, you know, that they're leaving a record of what happened for history. And, you know, I think in some ways, you know, you can look at it as doing it for the country, doing it for your family. But it does take a little bit of courage. But I don't think of all the 650,000 people who've done this, I don't think anyone regrets it. I think of StoryCorps as a project of hope, and not in a Hallmark kind of way. You know, there's nothing phony about it, or I hope there's nothing, you know, corny about it. I mean, it's just, you know, telling truths that are true. And, you know, we've had hundreds and hundreds of facilitators who, as you know, travel the country kind of bearing witness and collecting the wisdom of humanity. And all of them, when they come off the road, if you ask them what they've learned about people, they all give a version of the Anne Frank quote, that people are basically good, you know. And when you actually talk to people, when you actually listen to people, when you let people take down their guards, when we're not kind of in our corner suspicious, when you give people a chance to kind of show their best angels because they know that future generations are going to come, you know, you see that none of us are the worst things that we've ever done. And there's, you know, a light of goodness in all of us. And I do think that, you know, honor and hope are words that that we use in StoryCorps a lot. And I do think this is, you know, it's a great year to kind of look back on and take lessons from and get energized by, so that we can move forward into a better tomorrow.
I'm Michael Marsalek, producer of this special. Our thanks to the many Montanans who participated in the StoryCorps Montana tour in June. thanks to Nico Cadena, Eunice Cho, Danielle Anderson, and Dave Isay from StoryCorps. Thanks to Bo Baker, Beth Ann Austin, Cole Grant, and Ray Eknes from MTPR. The StoryCorps mobile tour is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. The excerpts from StoryCorps Montana were produced by Bo Baker, and StoryCorps Montana on the Air was made possible by the supporters of Montana Public Radio. To find out more about StoryCorps, how to participate, and to hear more excerpts of recordings, visit StoryCorps.org. Music on this program is by Philip Auberg. We have audio clips available at our website at mtpr.org. Remember to listen for the weekly StoryCorps conversations Friday mornings on Morning Edition on Montana Public Radio. For MTPR, I'm Michael Marsalek. Thanks for listening.